Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Basically turns Florida into a sanctuary state. It will neuter interior enforcement. They're spending a lot of money on housing illegal aliens. I don't want to house them. I want to deport them. That's what we need to do. That's the mission. So they came out with this. It is not going to get the job done.
But sir, I disagree. So we have a weird squabble going on in Florida right now, as you know, or maybe you don't. The governor called a special session in the legislature to address things like some emergency assistance, condo rules, the rules for getting signatures onto ballot initiatives. And also, what was the other topic? Oh, yeah, immigration, which is the main one, obviously. And, said, we're going to have a special session so that we can implement President Trump's priorities. And the legislature said, well, okay, we don't like this because it's not necessary since we have a session coming up. It seems premature and silly. Fine. So what we'll do is, we like President Trump, too. We talk to him, too. We're going to go ahead and cancel your special session, and we're going to have one of our own in order to just handle immigration. By the way, there is a theory out there. I don't know whether I subscribe to it exactly or not, but the theory is that really what DeSantis wanted was the petition reform, that was his real priority, and that the immigration one was kind of the plausible public-facing reason for shoving that stuff through, which would have made it almost impossible to pass any amendments to the Constitution. The outcome of which I don't mind. I don't think we should ever have amendments to the Constitution. I think it's an absurd process in Florida, and it ruins all the elections, and it taints them, and it's silly. And I actually agree with the governor. He even said one time, maybe a week or two ago, he said that actually we probably ought to have special elections for constitutional amendments. They ought to be a thing all unto themselves instead of being bundled together with everything else. I would agree with that, actually. That makes a lot of sense. But we ought to have them rarely, if at all. And so if he were able to get that done, that'd be great. I wouldn't mind. I don't think the way he was doing it is right. The idea was that you could only sign a petition to put a ballot initiative on the ballot if you requested to sign the petition, like have them send you a form the way you get a vote by mail, or if you went to the supervisor of elections office. You wouldn't have third-party signature gatherers anymore. And I just think the signature gathering threshold would be way too high. It just wouldn't happen anymore. Anyway, so there's a theory out there that really the special session was not about immigration. The special session was about petition signatures. And the other stuff was thrown in to make it seem like it wasn't that. And then when the Senate and the House took those things away and came back with immigration, well, he was pissed that they showed him up on not doing his bidding, and then he was pissed that they didn't do the thing that he really wanted them to do, and then he was extra pissed when they took away his authority as the guy who would run the anti-immigration or the immigration control and put it in Wilton Simpson's hands, the commissioner of agriculture, who he can't stand. It's Florida. The politics is messy. But the governor's assertion that what the legislature has passed would make us a sanctuary state is crazy. I mean, it doesn't make any sense because the bill does a lot of things that makes our immigration enforcement or behavior significantly stronger in the state. This is Lawrence McClure. He is the representative running the bill. Remember they broke everybody out into three different sessions, A, B, and C session on Monday on the House side. And the big one with about 40, 35 people in it, because they didn't want to do the traditional committee approach. They instead created three kind of ad hoc committees that, you know, would each hear these bills and discuss them or whatever. Anyway, so Lawrence McClure was the one running the bill.
Members, the maintenance of borders is one of the key components of national sovereignty. The people of Florida and the United States have made it clear they want our borders enforced and dangerous illegal aliens removed from the country. President Trump has taken decisive action to advance this goal and has asked the states for assistance. We here in the state of Florida are stepping up aggressively. Specifically, the Trump Act commands everyone in the state to enforce federal immigration law and to protect our borders. It creates the chief immigration officer and designates the commissioner of agriculture as that officer.
Yeah, that's kind of the main stuff. It's going to approve about $500 million in spending. Also, I do like this advisory board that they want to create to interact between the state and the local law enforcement officials and make sure that everybody's doing what they should be doing and that it's working well, this kind of federal level enforcement, state level enforcement, local level enforcement, that everybody's working effectively together on the same page.
It creates the State Immigration Enforcement Council within the OSIE, which is primarily composed of sheriffs and police chiefs for the purpose of advising the chief immigration officer.
I will say it's a little bit confusing that what you would have is the Immigration Enforcement Council. What's the acronym? IEC. So the job of IEC would be to interact with ICE. You'd have ICE and IEC working together. I sometimes feel like I'm the only one who thinks through the acronym implications of a lot of these things. But, you know, I know I'm not because they actually made it the Trump Act, right? T-R-U-M-P is the acronym they did. So I'm probably not. I don't know. Anyway, so you've got this advisory board, the IEC, and then you're going to have...
It establishes the Office of State Immigration Enforcement, or OSIE, to coordinate immigration enforcement with federal government.
So ICE, IEC, and OSIE. We're starting to sound like the federal government.
It increases criminal penalties pertaining to certain crimes committed by illegal immigrants. It creates a local law enforcement immigration grant program within OSIE to award grants to local law enforcement agencies to support their mission and cooperation with federal immigration agencies in the enforcement of federal immigration law.
So, you know, if you didn't know anything else about this situation and you listened to what was being presented in the legislature, you'd think, well, that seems pretty good. We're going to give all illegal immigrants here the automatic death penalty for unauthorized aliens, maximum sentence for any crime for anybody who's illegally here that commits the crime, you know, real ID requirements for securing the elections, expanding beds for ICE to, as the Trump administration wants, to detain people and to prevent catch and release, to give them a, you know, intermediate place. And the governor says, well, we shouldn't be containing them. We should be just deporting them. I mean, okay. RICO charges for people who work together with unauthorized aliens to cast a ballot illegally and, you know, a bunch of other things in the law. And the big one, really, in terms of what was fought about in the legislature, is to end in-state tuition for illegal immigrants or unauthorized aliens or whatever you want to call these folks. Because right now there's about 4,000 at the state colleges, think PSC, and about 2,500 at your state universities, think UWF, as, you know, places where people who are, you know, dreamers is what you typically think of them as at this age, people who were brought here, you know, as kids. They were not born here. They are undocumented. They don't have legal status, but they are in our higher education institutions right now, and they're getting in-state tuition, which is super cheap in Florida, versus out-of-state tuition, which is much more reasonable. I think the break is like 6,000 roughly versus about almost 30,000. You know, it's about five times more for out-of-state tuition versus in-state tuition. And so the real argument that they were having in the legislature was, you know, whether this is good or bad to get rid of that. Like, that was the focal point. It wasn't about cooperating with ICE. It wasn't about, you know, getting local law enforcement agents trained in the various standards that they need in order to interact effectively with ICE in order to meet federal protocols, qualifications that they have in order to do the things that they're being asked to do. There was a little bit of talk about, you know, running into schools and arresting, eight-year-olds or whatever. Generally speaking, I think that's a red herring. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, we kind of joked with Chip Simmons about that on Tuesday, and he's like, but y'all know that's a joke. I'm like, you know, yes, that, yeah, exactly. That's not going to happen. So they passed it. They passed it overwhelmingly in the House and the Senate, and not a veto-proof majority in the Senate unless you can get Democrats on board. I think the numbers, I didn't do the math of it, but I think the numbers in the House would be veto-proof with the Republicans who are on board. Because the governor is now threatening to veto it, as you kind of heard about yesterday, and the clip there was not very generous. So he wanted his thing, and they came back with their thing. And I don't know whether he really believes that his thing is so much better or different. I don't know whether they think their thing is so much better or different. It feels kind of like a pissing contest, you know, more than anything else. And so what you're going to get, if that's the case, is you're not going to get a calm, cool analysis of the issues. What you're going to get is, you know, heightened rhetoric. And the heightened rhetoric in this case is, you know, like, for example, you know, Danny Perez, Speaker of the House, who's been pretty on board with DeSantis for the last 6 years he's been in office. Now, all of a sudden, he and Ben Albert and the president of the Senate, they are, I mean, livid with DeSantis and have said so about, you know, calling him a liar and things. And DeSantis is shooting back the same way. And like, for example, you know, Alex Andrade, state representative, is a very close ally of Danny Perez. And, you know, he's put out basically a bullet list of all the ways that the weak proposal by Governor DeSantis fails and the strong Trump Act is really good. You know, you heard Michelle Salzman come out and say, you know, she was in favor of this. And, you know, she hasn't taken a position against DeSantis. I mean, maybe ever. So you really have a war between the families here. And probably what's going on in the background as well is the speaker and the senator are saying, and the Senate president are saying, look, we can get your stuff funded. And we will override his vetoes if he vetoes any of your local funding bills, which he did last year, which they've already started to override vetoes. So this is like, you know, real power politics going on in Florida. And the outcome, I don't know. I don't know with whether we're going to pass this. I mean, this bill's been passed. It hasn't been sent to him yet. He's going to either sign it or veto it. It's hard for me to see how he signs it, given what he's said. It's also hard for me to think of how he vetoes the Trump Act. Politically, it's not going to look so great. And then if he does veto it, will they override it? I mean, if you tell enough Democrats that we're going to be able to, you know, get your funding for your local projects, some of them may have to eat their words about how they couldn't vote for this. You also, it's weird for the Democrats because the Democrats can't really, for the Republicans, you can't have Democrats come out and say, well, we like this proposal versus the governor's because it's nicer. Because then that makes the Republicans look like DeSantis was right. And if the bill is actually stronger, as they say, than DeSantis's, Democrats can't come out and vote for it. So, you know, there's a lot of weird politics going on with this particular issue. And I do not know where we land, but we're in the thick of it. And the facts could change, you know, basically like today. I mean, they could send it to him today and he could veto it today. Or it might not be for a couple of weeks. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. And then we got session coming up where a lot of this is going to get resolved. 522 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I know you all have seen or heard the horrible news out of D.C. Where we basically had a commercial jet carrying members of the U.S. Ice skating team, I guess, a figure skating team, and some Russians maybe as well, maybe coming back from a juvenile training camp. I don't know if that means how many children were on board. 60 people plus four members of the staff, and they crashed into an Army Black Hawk helicopter that was doing training that had, I think the report was three people on board, and we don't know. They're in rescue operations right now, but I think it's most likely that we've lost all of them in a terrible incident at in D.C. So, you know, be praying for anybody to have survived. Certainly be praying for the first responders who are out there looking, but as a, you know, Pensacola is a place where we have interactions between the military and civilian all the time in our airspace. I mean, we are the definition of a joint airspace, right? You know, between Whiting and NAS Pensacola and, you know, incoming and outgoing military flights that are just transiting to somewhere else, and plus a very, very busy commercial airport. Plus, you know, private aviation, you got the maintenance, repair, and overhaul stuff with ST. You've got, you know, Blue Air. You've got, I mean, just, it's a very busy airspace. And so this is, you know, and we, of course, have seen, like, you know, things involving Army helicopters in the past here locally. So this is kind of near and dear to us because we care so much about military aviation and just general safety for our aviation airspace. So obviously we'll be paying a lot of attention to that and, you know, what happened. There's some theories, but just a horrible thing. And right now I think the best we can all do is just kind of pray for the families and any of the people who were involved. 524 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
The Celtic Angels enable their audiences to experience the real Ireland, celebrating their cherished heritage through Irish song. Five beautiful women with glorious harmonies make up the Celtic Angels. The Celtic Knights world champion dancers leave audiences breathless. And the Trinity Band Ensemble with flawless interpretations of authentic Irish music. Join us for award-winning song, dance, and music as the Celtic Angels carry you to Ireland on Wings of Music.
Coming to the Sanger Theater March 17th. Get your tickets now. Identity Theft Awareness Week is here. There's a victim of identity theft every 3 seconds. 3 seconds. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second and will fix identity theft guaranteed or your money back. Plus, plans include the $1 million protection package with up to $3 million in coverage for the most comprehensive plan. Take control of your identity with LifeLock. Save up to 40% off your first year with my name Clay as the promo code at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk. Mornings at 9, right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning!
Morning!
Good morning!
Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
I wanna be the slip, slip, word upon your lip, lip, rather that you rip, rip, break me down and build me up, whatever it takes. Cause I love the adrenaline in my veins, I do whatever it takes.
It's good that we're commemorating these two men today, but in a way, it's an understatement. Because the Bronxons have been here for 200 years.
So State Senator Don Gates, yesterday Matt Gates' father was speaking at a dedication of a road to Barton John Bronxon, turning Avalon, a stretch of Avalon, into that, you know, commemoration. And he just kind of froze and sort of stumbled. And you can hear there, I think that was Bob Johnson who kind of rushed up there and saying, get a chair, get a chair. And then he was taken to the hospital and apparently is doing fine. You know, Alex Andrade was there and he said he's doing fine now. And Matt Gates has said he's doing fine. And I had interacted a little bit with Don myself last night and just told him, I hope you get well soon. He said, thank you. And so, as sometimes happens with older folks, you know, it was just some incident and got the medical attention needed and hopefully everything. And that's the end of it. You know, hopefully everything is fine with him. And certainly him also praying for his health and for his family. 527 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, flights in and out of Reagan National Airport are on hold today as search and rescue operations there continue on the Potomac River. The president and CEO of the Metropolitan Washington Airport Authority said in a press conference that they would be closed through at least 11 o'clock Eastern time this morning. President Trump has now signed another executive order, this one calling for the preparation of a facility at Guantanamo Bay to be used for deported migrants. That order will have the Department of Defense and Homeland Security prepare a 30,000 migrant facility at the prison site in Cuba.
Yeah, and I guess there's already they already do migrant processing for some Cubans. It's a small footprint, not much structure there, you know, so they would have to build. You know, in order to do this is my understanding. I'm not all that familiar with Gitmo, but, you know, that's the way I've understood it. So there's a lot to be done to make this happen. But anyway,
it's a lot of people on one side of the island. You don't
sure
think it could tip over, do you?
Oh, stop it. Nice, though, by the way. Nice. Way to bring Hank Johnson back into the mix. The Georgia Republican, the Democrat. From the 6th District, who long ago...
I've been
ago,
looking for a way.
Oh, that's fantastic. While you're talking, I'm going to pull it up real fast. Go on, keep
right.
talking, and I'll find
the,
it for you.
The Federal Reserve is now leaving interest rates unchanged. That announcement coming after they cut the rate three times last year. It also marks the first policy decision of President Trump's second term. Trump did say he'd like to see the central bank lower their rates here in the very near future.
Oh, man, I'm so close. I've almost got it.
He's almost there. Feverishly working.
I love it.
Yeah, my fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
We don't anticipate that. The Guam population, I think, currently about 175,000. And again, with 8,000 Marines and their families, it's an addition of about 25,000 more into the population.
And I never know whether my favorite part is the lunacy of thinking that 8,000 Marines have the footprint weight to tip Guam over, or the completely straight-faced, deadpan, rational explanation by Admiral Robert Willard. Sir, we're not concerned about that prospect.
And that's
right
only 8,000. We're talking 30,000.
Right. I mean, who knows? And I don't even know the square mileage of Cuba versus Guam. I'm not familiar. So maybe, you know what
we're
I should
gonna
do?
Need to
I
get
should,
our top man
I should shoot Representative Johnson, still in office. I should shoot Representative Johnson, midget throwing Johnson, because the cage match between the midgets and the Giants. Remember that whole thing?
Yeah.
I'll shoot him a text and see if I can get him on the show today to, you know, assess these concerns.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm CJ Papa. First responders searching for survivors in the Potomac River in our nation's capital after a tragic mid-air collision at busy Reagan National Airport.
Just before 9 p.m. last night, American Airlines, this is what we know. A jet with 64 people aboard, including the crew, collided with that U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter with three soldiers on board, including both pilots. That airliner was attempting to land on runway 33 at Reagan National Airport.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson family's waiting word for their loved ones. So far, there's been no signs of survivors. President Trump says he's been briefed on the situation. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser will hold a news conference at 7:30 a.m. Eastern. Members of the U.S. figure skating community on board that flight, officials for the sports governing body, confirming young skaters were coming up from a camp in Kansas. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got partly cloudy skies, 55 degrees this morning. Senator Don Gates is reportedly in stable condition after collapsing yesterday during a road naming ceremony. Matt Gates said his father has since recovered since that happened yesterday morning as they were having a ceremony for John Broxson Parkway. Matt said his father had a blood pressure drop incident. But he is recovering now and appreciates the kind words, prayers, and offers of assistance at the time. Well, some news coming out of last week's snowstorm. A makeup day has been scheduled because of the snow days that students had to take. Escambia County Public Schools does say that Monday, February 17th, will be a full instructional day for students. Initially, that day had been scheduled as a professional development day for teachers and staff. Schools and offices will all be operating on a normal schedule that day. Again, that's Monday, February 17th. Pensacola's city leaders say they were scrambling this week to figure out what local effects the federal aid funding freeze could have. City Administrator Tim Kinsella said his primary focus was to figure out what programs were in immediate jeopardy.
Federal funding is really complex, and the amount of programs that touch our citizens that are that are done so by federal dollars is huge. One of the biggest ones was our Section 8 housing. Really, our entire housing department is run through federal dollars.
And Kinsella said there were about 1,800 citizens in Pensacola that depend on Section 8 to pay their rent, many of them elderly or disabled. He says the federal aid funding freeze did also coincide with the end of the month and rent being due for many of those people. Ultimately, HUD clarified Section 8 renters would not be affected by that. Kinsella said larger city projects that have received federal grant funding also wouldn't be immediately affected. They'd have time to work out the issues. And this week, a judge did temporarily halt that freeze through early next week. Governor Ron DeSantis calling on lawmakers to do better when it comes to addressing immigration. DeSantis holding roundtable discussions around the state yesterday after the legislature passed an immigration bill they called the Trump Act, which the governor said is weaker than he would like. DeSantis said the bill doesn't honor our promises to voters, fails to meet the moment, and would actually weaken state immigration enforcement. A human smuggling bust in South Florida apparently has ties to Central Florida. Federal agents say they arrested four men in Miami-Dade County Tuesday. Court documents released to show those men were involved in trying to transport 26 illegal immigrants to Orlando. The migrants were all from China. They were taken to a border patrol station in Broward County. NASA astronaut Peggy Wilson is being inducted into the 2025 Astronaut Hall of Fame. Whitson spent 675 days in space, more than any other American astronaut or any other female astronaut in the world. She'll command her second commercial space mission this spring. leading crew to the International Space Station on the Axiom Mission 4. It's 5:35 at News Radio. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast.
We are going to be looking at a cloudy day today with temperatures warming up near 70 degrees in the afternoon. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 63. Going into your Friday, showers and thunderstorms moving in through the morning and afternoon. 80% chance of rain. High near 72 on Friday. Friday evening, temperatures dropping near 48. On Saturday, partly cloudy skies with a high near 68 and a low near 48 degrees. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And thank you very much, Brooke. 55 in Pensacola, 57 in Gulf Breeze. And the cool spot this morning, definitely Milton. 50 degrees reported there. Our next news in 30 minutes, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Nicole Murray with your money now. The Federal Reserve said it will leave the benchmark interest rate unchanged at its most recent meeting. The Fed said it will maintain the federal funds rate at its current range of 4.25% to 4.5%. The decision comes after the central bank trimmed rates three times starting in September of 2024. Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg said it's too early to tell what impact DeepSeek's breakthrough AI model will have on his company and the broader tech industry. Zuckerberg also dismissed the notion that Meta's overall AI spending will drop now that DeepSeek has allegedly proven cutting-edge AI requires less money and computing than previously thought. Meta continues to lose billions of dollars developing the virtual reality and augmented reality technologies. The social media giant reported fourth quarter earnings yesterday and said its Reality Labs unit recorded an operating loss of nearly $5 billion while generating $1.1 billion in sales.
Join Stefan Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College on the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10 a.m. Key Marine Center is sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. It's a dream team, so join them tomorrow at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
We are expecting some snow here later today.
Severe weather can strike at any time.
Mayor Reeves, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thanks for having me. Our 17 critical roads within the city have already been cleared of snow.
When you need to know.
Scambia County officials are asking residents to be safe during the storm.
So we're asking people to stay indoors if you do not have to go out, because then that will allow.
Severe weather can strike at any time.
When you need to know.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
City of Pensacola. We are at Public Works with Fred and Brandon, the famous salt spreaders from the snowstorm of 2025. What'd you think, Fred?
It's horrible.
It's horrible, he said. So how'd you learn how to spread salt that good, Fred?
Brandon taught me.
Brandon taught me. What about one of you had some of this going on there? The little Mardi Gras bead throw, maybe?
Yeah, so that was the crew from Public Works embracing the hilarity of their own, let's just say, slightly inadequate salt spreading efforts as widely distributed on the internet and on social media. Caught in the back of a pickup truck, hand throwing a 5-gallon bucket of rock salt onto a dry pavement. The dry pavement is fine. That you can pre-treat before the storm, but the salt spreader is supposed to be, make an entire sheet of salt, like for the whole thing, like you're fertilizing the whole road, not just hand throwing some Mardi Gras beads amount of salt back on the road. So it's fine, but I love that they embrace it. I thought that was great. Joining us yesterday, we had a chance to talk to the city administrator for the city of Pensacola, Tim Kinsler, retired captain, U.S. Navy captain, former commanding officer at AMS Pensacola, and now the second in command in the city of Pensacola. And his call sign, by the way, in case you don't know, is Lucky. Lucky, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News. How'd it do with the bumper music, sir?
It was perfect. Well done. Sorry, it's one of my favorites. That was actually the song that me and my wife danced to during our wedding.
Just kidding. All right. Oh, so that's how it's going to be. All right. I fell for it. And that's fair enough. You know, one for you. You win. Okay. So let's do talk a little bit about this. I loved that they embraced the funny. I love that they did a video acknowledging how silly it was to be spreading such a tiny amount of salt on a street. Not that it was dry. That was fine. But on a, they're in Pensacola. What do they know about preparing a street for a snowstorm, right?
Yeah, right. Actually, I talked to the directors about this yesterday and how, I was just really proud of the guys that we owned it.
Yeah.
Some folks make fun of us. Fine. That's okay. The guys are out there doing their best. And it was a funny video. So own it. Just make it ours. Make it our own. We throw the words historical and unprecedented around a lot. But this was historical. It was unprecedented. And we don't know the first thing about how to prepare for a snowstorm. We were learning on the job. So, it was great, that video. It was perfect.
I know. And by the way, I think that one of the great kudos for the city of Pensacola is that, I guess through D.C.'s connection with the mayors and the organization that he goes to all the time where he meets all these mayors, is that that's what allowed you guys to secure the snowplows. I would have never in my life thought we'd see snowplows running around through downtown Pensacola, but that was a big advantage too, is having, plows and a fairly large amount of salt in the end was actually distributed. But, those are good things that you guys get kudos for.
Yes. So in the entire Northwest Florida, there's two snowplows for the entire of the Northwest Florida, and they're not in Pensacola. When we declared, we wanted to declare an emergency as soon as possible so we could give the mayor the tools that he needed and we needed to be able to spend the money we needed to do. So getting those snow plows was, it was actually our public works director, Amy Tootle, working with some of our partners in here in the area, Rhodes Incorporated, and they were able to bring down some plows down from Atlanta.
Oh, so it was Rhodes Inc. Okay. No, that's interesting. So it was Rhodes Inc. That's interesting. Okay, go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No. But Amy called me, right when we started really preparing for it, and she's like, "Man, Tim, I got some great news. We got 5 snow plows from Atlanta." I says, "You're kidding me." He says, "Nope, they're on the road right now. They're driving down." And they were the saving grace, because our number one concern was that we kept those major arteries clear for emergency vehicles, because we knew there was going to be emergencies during the storm. There was either going to be fires, medical emergencies, police emergencies. So to get those vehicles to the residences and then to the hospitals if necessary. And I'm really glad we did, because there are several fires, there were medical emergencies or police emergencies that, if it wasn't for those snowplows, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, and Cervantes, Pace, Garden, Davis Highway, Airport, Brent. It was really well done to keep those roads open so that first responders could, get to where they need to go. People could get to the hospital if they needed, the key parts of that. What's in the debrief? Yeah. What did you guys learn for, God forbid, next time? The answer certainly can't be invest in a lot of anti-snow, paraphernalia, because it's an unproductive, but I assume what you were thinking about was how can we prearrange, joint use agreements or memorandums of understanding or reciprocity agreements so that we have this in place in the future if we have to prepare. Is that right?
Yeah. I've been through a few crises in my life, and to be honest with you, I'm kind of getting over being in a leadership position for all these unprecedented things that happen in a crisis.
Yeah, no kidding.
But the important thing in any crisis are about people, number one. They're always about people, the people being affected and the people that are responding to it. And I don't care what kind of a crisis it is, whether it's a financial crisis or it's a natural disaster, whatever it is, it's always about people. And in order to get the resources appropriate to stem the bleeding in any crisis, it's all about the decision points and having the ability to make the right decisions, having the right people in the room to make those decisions, and having the right authorities to be able to do it and do it quickly. So that was my number one focus from the beginning of this, and setting the city up in a way that the mayor had the information that he needed and support that he needed to be able to make decisions when necessary, so we could get our people the things that they needed. And out of everything that happened, I think that was probably the most important thing. That was the thing that allowed us to be so flexible and get this stuff done, just allowing our folks to do their job and giving them the authorities that they need and the funding that they needed to be able to go and do it.
Look at that. If you make an organization full of experienced and good decision makers, you'll get good results in the end. Makes sense. Of course, I know you're well aware. Yesterday, the White House put out this sudden announcement that all funding to everybody was going to be paused. And then they, you know, kind of came out with some clarification that it wouldn't affect things like direct payments to individuals through Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, or SNAP. But still, you know, we know that the county is now doesn't know what's going to happen with their initiative to buy electric vehicles for ECAT and a couple of other initiatives. What does the city see? It's now been paused by a judge, so the pause is paused, but still, Monday, everything could change. What are you guys doing to prepare? What do you see being potentially in jeopardy?
Great question. So yesterday, my number one focus was to understand what programs were under jeopardy within the next 24 to 48 hours, because after spending 32 years in the federal government, I knew that this was going to eventually work itself out, that we would get clarity. It was unfortunate that the memo from OMB didn't really give the clarity that a lot of municipalities and counties and other organizations needed to understand what was going to get cut. When you read the memo, you think, oh, it's this, it's that. Yeah, that's clear. It's really not. There's federal funding is really complex. And the amount of programs that touch our citizens that are that are done so by federal dollars is huge. One of the biggest ones was our Section 8 housing. Really, our entire housing department is run through federal dollars. So we needed to understand what the repercussions were to those citizens that are expected rent. And that's 1,800 citizens that are elderly, that are disabled, that are in dire need, that qualify for that Section 8 housing. So, and this also coincided with the end of the month when rent was due. So we had to understand what we were going to do to try and allay the fears of the landlords that were expecting the checks, but more importantly, those residents that expect to have a roof over their heads for the next 30 days.
Yeah.
So we kind of had a plan in place, but fortunately, thank goodness, HUD came out at the end of yesterday to say that after they got clarification from OMB to say that Section 8 housing would not be affected. So that was really the biggest one that I was worried about. All the other things, the big projects that we're working on, like funding for the American Magic Hangar, for Hollis T. Williams Stormwater Park, all of those were long-term projects that if I don't have clarification in the next week or 2 weeks, that's okay. Because they're long-term and some of those projects haven't started yet. But really getting to understand in the next 24 hours, what's going to affect us? How are we going to be able to mitigate that? Because I knew within a few days, everything would start getting clarity. And I think you're going to start seeing that over the next couple of days on Monday, Tuesday. We've already seen lawsuits against the federal government by states. That's going to force the government to clarify themselves. There's members of Congress that are, their phones are ringing off the hook from citizens, municipalities, states to try and get clarity on exactly what this means. So I think the White House is going to come out with clear direction here in the next couple of days.
Yeah, and it's a bit of an unfortunate situation for us because we don't have a congressman right now, so you don't have that direct access. Of course, you have Senator Scott and Ruby. Well, and Senator Scott, and I guess Senator Moody? Anyway, yeah I guess, you know, so you do have some access, but getting clarity, as you say, is going to be the key. I would imagine the grant writers at the city are also kind of like, all of a sudden, the whole world might be different because, you know, one of the things that DC has done so effectively in his administration is you go out to get other people's money. You know, and now all of that stuff may change. So, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. But I appreciate that perspective. And it's good news to hear that at least the most urgent need for the people who depend on the money for their rent is, you know, that that's going to be okay. One of the things that I was curious about is we, you know, City Council took some action last time around on the Bay Bluffs Park. Am I right in thinking that we might start to see actual construction slash demolition activity maybe this summer? And do we know yet really what the long-term shape of the park reopening is going to look like?
So let me just so citizens understand, this is a $2.2 million grant that we got from the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, but actually we didn't get it. It has to be administered through Conservation Florida. So what happened in the last city council was that we entered into it. Council gave us permission to enter into an agreement with Conservation Florida. Now Conservation Florida has to work with the Department of Environmental Protection to actually get that $2.2 million. So they are just the flow through where that money is going to come to us. So if folks are wondering why is this taking so long, this is the burdensome part of getting grants from outside entities. The project is, we want to do this right. We've got, as with a lot of these grant projects, we've got one chance to do this right and do it right for the citizens. So we want to get citizen input. We want them to be part of the solution to what the Bay Bluffs Park is going to look like. I've heard, you know, we put out that it might take about 2 years, you know, trying to have it done by 2027. I'd like to see it done sooner.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking into a lot of projects within the city that we can perhaps change how we do business a little bit and try and speed those up to get the citizens the use of that park. It's been, it's such a beautiful asset for the city and for the residents that I'd really like to see us getting it done sooner. But we got to do it right. We got to do it. And that sometimes takes a little bit longer than we would like. Plus the fact that we've got so many projects going on in the city that if you just take one of them, it would be a generational project just by itself. So we're juggling a lot of balls, and we got to make sure we get them all done right.
No, that's true. And you know what? I had been conflating in my brain, I think, the Baptist project where it looks like maybe we're going to see something this year with the Bay Bluffs Park. So appreciate you. That's gives me a more realistic time. Disappointing that it still might be 2 years, but I understand sometimes these things kind of they are what they are, especially with the limitations of working through a third party agency funding. So I appreciate that. Tim, go ahead. What were you saying?
If I tell you it's 2 years and we get it done in a year, then I'm wrong.
Wait, yeah, no, that's fair. Set expectation setting. All right, we're almost completely out of time, but I did want to ask you. I think by my count, you've been on the job about 6 months. So this is my my 6 month review question. What's the one thing that you've learned that was the most surprising since taking the job?
How much I love it. I swear to God, this is one of the funnest jobs and the most rewarding jobs I've almost ever had, except when I was a squadron commanding officer. That's the closest thing this compares to. And it's because when I was base commander, I loved the work and I loved the job, but I didn't have the resources or the authorities to do what I thought needed to be done. Here I do. Here we have the resources and we have the authorities to be able to make real change that affects citizens every single day. And in my mind, if you're working in public service, you couldn't work in a better place to do that. The federal government is so frustrating because things take so long. If citizens think things take a long time here in the city, man, it's lightning speed compared to what you see at the federal or state government. And the people in the city are amazing. They love this place. They work hard. The amount of hours those folks put in over the storm, it was eye-watering. So it is absolutely how much I'm enjoying this and how much fun it is.
Tim Kinsella is the city administrator for the city of Pensacola. Lucky, great to talk to you. Always appreciate the insight. Appreciate the leadership that you represent in the city and the work that your folks are doing. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, sir.
You know, it's kind of funny as I was listening to that. It reminds me, I had a thought yesterday as I was driving home that, you know, how sometimes you do the radio show and then you think later what would have been the perfect thing to have done and it's too late to do it. My question should have been, because, you know, he's a former, you know, a squadron leader and a pilot and, you know, retired captain. And aviators always have call signs. And the purpose of a call sign is what? Is to remind you of your biggest mess up. Like, it's meant to embarrass you about your biggest mess up ever. And so what I should have asked him is, as an aviator, what would he have assigned as the call signs to these two city employees? And, salt and pepper,
Sprinkles.
Oh, sprinkle. And because call signs have to sound a certain way.
Right.
They have to be clear over the radio, typically two syllables. Sprinkles is a great call sign. I was thinking birdseed and Mardi Gras. Or maybe you could say rock salt. Rock salt could be. But rock salt's a little too, on the nose. Like, Mardi Gras is a little farther away, which is good. Sprinkles is good.
That's good.
And
huh?
Sprinkles is 100% a call sign that the Navy would have. That's great. Oh, man, I love it. Anyway, 437-1620, 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Let's get to the points. MasterCard reward points from Pinair Credit Union. Open a new account today and you can earn 20,000 free reward points in the first 90 days. Use those points for travel, merchandise, even cash back. And with no hidden fees and no balance transfer fees, Pinair's Reward MasterCard fits you perfectly. Get started online at pinair.org/creditcards. Subject to credit approval, terms and conditions may apply. Offer available on new accounts only. See website for details.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services, advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
Join Acupuncture and Wellness of Pensacola tomorrow at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Dr. Rebecca Gibbons will be here to answer your questions about the many benefits of acupuncture. If you suffer from chronic back pain, neuropathy, or joint pain, or even stress and anxiety, this is a show you will not want to miss. Tomorrow at 9, with Acupuncture and Wellness of Pensacola on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Saturdays, you get the Garden Line Encore at 9, At Home with Gary Sullivan at 10, Swan Capital at 1, Let's Go Pensacola at 4.
That is mahogany.
Good morning, 5:58, almost 5:57 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Going to be like 70 later today, so we're back to January, as it should be. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David, it's weird for Iowa and Illinois kids to talk about how the norm is 70 in January,
right?
Yeah,
I know.
Right?
I love it.
I do love it, too.
That's why I moved here. It's wonderful. Well, President Trump has signed an executive order calling for the preparation of a facility at Guantanamo Bay to be used for deported migrants. That order will have the Departments of Defense and Homeland Security prepare a 30,000 migrant facility at the prison site in Cuba. Some of music's biggest stars coming together to help raise money for the Los Angeles wildfire relief efforts. The Fire Aid Benefit Concert is happening in Inglewood, California. They've got Billie Eilish, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Stevie Wonder, and No Doubt, and several other bands all participating in that to raise money for wildfire victims. And, of course, the big news this morning, Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C., completely shut down. Search and rescue operations continuing today on the Potomac River. The president and CEO of the Metropolitan Washington Airport Authority had a press conference last night. They said the airport would be closed through at least 11 o'clock this morning. And right now, fears are that if anybody survived the crash, which is looking less likely, hypothermia may have set in from being in the water.
Yeah. NBC Washington is reporting that they've got about 30
bodies have been recovered so far, is what they're saying. So I'm sure we'll find out more top of the hour from Fox News. But yeah, this is the worst aviation mishap in a long time in America.